Fesco and Dusty with you on 96.5 The Fan as we roll through the final day of the week. Dusty will be back on Monday. We'll all be back together as we get excited for the beginning of football season. And so I saw this story the other day. My dad sent this one to me because he was, I don't know how he reacted as a 75-year-old to this one. I'm sure he probably had, you know, kind of thoughts on both sides of the equation. But what has happened is a 12-year-old baseball player in New Jersey in Little League, he's at the center of a legal battle right now because what had happened was a week ago, he hit a big-time home run and did the bat flip and was ejected from the game, which means he's suspended for the next game according to Little League rules, right? According to Little League rules. And so what they did, what the parents did, and rightfully so, they challenged it and they went to the courts on this one, and the courts ruled that, you know, he can play in the next game. He really didn't do anything wrong because there's no rule on the books for a banishment or a ban for a game or a suspension of a game for a bat flip. Now, there are rules in Little League that says you cannot excessively celebrate, but again, that is a term that you could take differently than what it's a subjective term, right? Over celebrating. What do you consider over celebrating versus what I consider over celebrating? And so,
yeah, they also use horseplay. I mean,
yeah.
How could you define horseplay?
How do you define horseplay and all that? So the ejection came from a 2-run home run this kid hit in the 6th inning of the game. His bat flip, which landed in front of the opposing team dugout scene or the Haddonfield dugout scene in the video, was deemed excessive by the umpire and resulted in a disqualification and a 1-game suspension. And so they're like, oh, come on, man, we can't do that. Although the league's rule book doesn't explicitly ban bat flips, umpires can interpret excessive celebrations as unsportsmanlike conduct. They found out that that incident, the bat flipping, is horseplay, which we did find to be incredibly hypocritical. The Little League promotes and encourages bat flipping all over their website, their social media platforms, and they broadcast the Little League World Series and show these kids doing it all the time. They do. When you see highlights, everybody's doing a bat flip. And when I read this story and saw that this kid was suspended, I'm like, come on now. We can't be doing that. We've got to get away from this. And we've got to let people have fun again,
dude,
in sports, right? That's what sports is all about. And we got so whittled down to this. We don't want to show the other team up, respect the game, all of this kind of stuff that people want to preach. You know what that's doing? It's taking the fun away from the game. It's taking the enjoyment away from the game. It's taking the natural reaction, if you will, away from the game. And you're starting to see leagues at the professional level get back to having more fun. The NFL has implemented fun again. Right now, you can't go and stand in front of the other team's sideline.
Yeah, there's lines.
There's lines, but they're allowing the guys to celebrate, to choreograph the touchdown celebrations. And we all love them. We're having fun.
It's fun.
That's what sports needs to be, fun. And baseball, for the longest time, became a no fun league, right? It was no fun in Major League Baseball. No bat flips, no staring down the pitcher. You hit a home run, you better keep your head down and around the bases. Now you got guys dancing at second base and doing signals with their hands and doing the bat flip and having that kind of fun, showing that personality. Little League kids watch the big leaguers do this kind of stuff.
Of course.
They're going to emulate those guys, and they should be emulating those guys. And if you're in the Little League World Series or the playoffs for the Little League or whatever level it is, and you hit a big home run that puts your team up in the last inning, or you won the game in the last inning and you do a bat flip, why are we worried about that? That's cool. That's fun. That kid's having enjoyment. And you know what happens if kids have enjoyment when they play sports? They continue to play sports. They're having fun. They want to be part of it. It's not looked at as something that's a job or a punishment. They're saying, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to have fun. And when I do something big, I'm going to be able to celebrate. It's okay to allow this. We got into this rut for a while, for like 20 years, where having fun in sports was seemed as wrong, and we can't have fun, and we can't celebrate, and we can't show the other team up. The other team doesn't want to be shown up, play better.
I mean, I remember it even starting when I was playing sports as a just a little league football guy or whatever it was. Just if you scream or if you yell in celebration after the ref would come up and say, hey, tone that down. And I remember thinking like, what? We just scored. Like, I'm excited. I didn't even scream at someone. I just said, like, let's go. Like, yeah. Kind of thing. Like, hey, tone that down kind of thing. So, yeah, it's definitely been here for a minute. This is a legitimate child, dude.
Yeah.
And you said if it's a big time moment, this is a sixth inning. He hit a 2-run home run to put his team. I mean, come on. Come on. This is what sports are about. It's about these moments and coming to the call and answering the call and
right.
He did that. So I think this is ridiculous, man. It's egregious. We've gone way too far with this. The no fun league. And I think something that ticks me off about it too is you mentioned baseball, no fun. The NFL has started to come back there.
Right.
NBA's always kind of had some silliness to it. But when they show, when the MLB, when the NFL shows a highlight reel of a hodgepodge of games, they'll show celebrations, they'll show dances, they'll show bat flips as a part of what makes the game fun. And then on the other side, they'll find players, they'll find teams and tell them you can't do that. So which one is it? They talk out of both sides of their mouth with this quite a bit.
Yeah, but I don't think we're finding guys anymore. Unless you go over there and stand in front of somebody's sidelines and, you know, mug them. You know, they're not fining for celebrations anymore in the NFL. They're not even fining in baseball for that kind of stuff anymore. They're allowing the bat flip now. They brought that back to the game. It's another thing that Rob Manfred did to help this game move forward and to show that it has fun, because kids and anybody, no matter who you are, right? Let's say you're walking down the street tonight with your friends and there's two bars. One bar's hopping, man. It's karaoke. Everybody's having a good time. And the other bar's dead and nothing's going on inside that bar. Which bar are you choosing? The bar that looks like it's having a good time, or the bar where there's a dude sitting there with a fake leg on the bar scratching his nub smoking a cigarette?
Well, Savannah Bananas has kind of showed you this in real life, right?
Exactly.
They fill up stadiums.
You want to go to where the fun is. You want to be part of that. Everybody, whether they're a kid or they're an adult, wants to be somewhere where they feel like everybody's having a good time.
Yes.
You want to be part of that. And so if you're going to try to outlimit this fun and not let these kids have fun, you're essentially chasing them away from the game. We want kids to embrace sports right now, right? We want kids to be playing. We want kids outside. We want kids active. We want them to know sports is a lot of fun. And if you say, yes, you can go out there and have these moments, but you can't celebrate, you worked hard for that. I don't care if you're 12 years old.
That's
you're still working
thing,
hard for all that stuff. You've got to be able to have a little bit of a reward at the end. It's hard to score a touchdown in the NFL or
get
a home run in baseball. And when you do that, you've worked your ass off for that moment. Celebrate that moment.
Well, yeah, it teaches you to value what you work hard for and what you succeed at. If you study for a test and you get an A, by God, man, go out and have a nice dinner with your family or with some friends. And if you're not 12 years old, go have a drink with your buds and celebrate that A or whatever it is. Like, that's the part of life that you work for. Like, the hard work is great, but the results in succeeding is really what we live for. And if you're not giving the kids the chance to kind of have that outlet of excitement and, hey, look at me, mom. Look at me, friend. Like, look at what I did. I worked on this. I've spent the last few years refining my craft, and I've come up with a big home run, and that's really important to me. And with the adrenaline pumping, I'm going to toss my bat a couple feet in the air in celebration and pump my fists up. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
From the 785, if you're an introvert, the dead bar sounds good. I agree. That's me.
That's me. Yeah.
It's 100% me.
No line for a drink.
I'd be in that bar with no problem at all. I'd be going, hey, we get a drink over here.
Exactly.
But I'm not normal. I am the introvert guy.
Yeah.
I would sit in that bar by myself and be just fine with it because I can get a cocktail, right?
The guy with the nub leg, you and him just talking.
Just talking about whatever. Yeah. You know, I'd be fine with that, 100% with you, the 785. I do want to address this one, though, from the 913. I love a nice bat flip, but where do you draw the line? I've seen kids throw the bat like 30 feet in the air and the bat lands by first base. Well, you draw the line, you pull the kid aside and say, don't throw it that far next time.
Yeah.
Or maybe, if you want to have some fun in practice, work on bat flipping. Do that at the end of practice.
Oh, nice.
With your kids. All right, kids, we're going to work on the bat flip. Let's go. Everybody's going to get a home run. You know how much fun that practice
would be? That would be awesome. That would be great.
You know how much fun those kids would have
great
if you worked on the bat flip at the end of practice?
Yes.
Instead of running sprints or something stupid like that nobody wants to do and people see as punishment these days, work on the bat
work
flip.
Work on the bat flip, man.
Practice.
I love that.
All right, this is how we're going to do it. And you show them and you just flip it straight up in the air. You don't want to throw it out there. You don't want to hit the dugout. Work on the bat flip. Kids would absolutely love it.
I love that. Say that at the beginning of practice. Hey, guys, give your all because at the end here, we're doing bat flips. I'm like, let's go.
Right.
That's awesome, man. That's what it's about.
It is. And you know what? The kids are going to get in that car and they're going to drive home from practice and they're going to say, Mom, guess what? We had fun today. Yeah. What'd you guys do? We worked on bat flips. Right. They won't remember another thing that they did
Seriously.
In that practice, but they will get in that car and they will tell you that they had fun today. And we have taken that out of sports for the kids. It's always about, oh, we got to get them in the right academy team and this and that and the other thing. And
oh, man,
meanwhile, the kid reaches 18, like, I don't really want to play this stuff anymore. I'm burnt out. I'm tired. It's not fun anymore.
Love's lost.
You got to keep the sports fun for the kids. The minute it stops being fun, then it becomes a job and it becomes something that they don't want to do. And so I think it's our job as the adults in this world to show these kids you can have a lot of fun playing sports, allow them to have a lot of fun playing sports, and allow them to celebrate those moments, because you don't get many of those moments in your life and in sports where you have an opportunity to go out there and truly celebrate and truly have fun, right?
From the 913, there's a bar in Sabetha, Kansas. Is that
Sabetha?
Right? Sabetha, Kansas, where the old man at the end of the bar takes his fake eye out and puts in it his beer. Great time.
See, I'd go there. I would be in on that, man.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds like a bar in Sabetha, Kansas. I mean, that sounds like a mid-state Kansas bar, like something that would be, you know, there's this place in Salina back in the day. We called it Leonard's because that was the bartender. I can't remember what the name of the tavern was, but it was red shag carpet. It had a window unit air conditioner that got the dog hair caught in it, so every once in a while it would shoot out fire. The dog would be behind the bar licking the glasses, so you never ordered anything in a glass. You always got it out of a bottle, but it was a nice place.
Yeah.
It was the Hideaway, I think, is what it was called in Salina, Kansas. But the bartender was Leonard, so they called it Leonard's.
Leonard's.
Yeah. It was the dog licking the glasses the dog hair shooting out. It was a nice, classy bar.
Oh, very classy.
Those are
high
good
end
places. Yeah.
Kegs and eggs and football. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. those are the things that you like to get after. So coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, a list that includes Andy Reid way down in it. We'll tell you how dumb that is next.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at TheFan965 for behind-the-scenes content from the show. Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
From the 417 on the Jay Southland tow service text line, does Dave Tube live in, however you said, Sabetha?
Dang it.
Your microphone going way, your headphone too. Snapped back like your headphone did.
Crazy back here.
Growing boy needs himself some new headphones back there. And a new microphone for that matter.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, my goodness back there. So congratulations to you for getting a new microphone and new headphones all in the same day.
Take the day, 417.
Yeah,
nice
that's
job.
Really good.
That's really good.
That's
dang
really
it. How do you say it?
Sabetha.
Sabetha.
Yeah,
okay.
Sabetha,
I got
Kansas.
It.
I'll
remember it.
Absolutely. Now you will remember it.
Yes,
yeah,
will.
Yeah, you'll remember Smith Center where Mitch is from, and you'll remember Sabetha. I guarantee if you call Mitch right now, and I'm sure he's out watching practice
he's locked in.
At St. Joe, where the Chiefs are, you ask him, first of all, you ask him who the mascot of Sabetha is. He'll obviously know that one, but he'll also tell you three people from Sabetha, Kansas who have made a difference in the United States of America.
I love it.
I guarantee it. I guarantee you he would know three people from Sabetha who made a difference in something in the United States of Kansas, or United States of Kansas, United States of America. Yes, the United States of Kansas. Oh, God help us all, right? If it was the United States of Kansas. Hey, join 96.5 The Fan live at Hollywood Casino on Friday, August 8th. Cody and Gold plus The Drive will be broadcasting live from the Sportsbook inside Hollywood Casino. We'll be registering fans to win a signed Charles Amenihu football and a pair of tickets to the Chiefs and Colts. Be sure to follow Hollywood Casino on Facebook, Instagram, and X and enter their giveaway on August 7th for a chance to win $100 in Penn cash on August 8th every hour from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. So that is coming up in a couple of weeks as we get you ready for the start of football season. So some jackass put out this list of the top 10 offensive play callers in the NFL. Who put this list out? PFSN or something like that? Pro Football, nerd site, right? Pro Football Nerds Are Us 365. And they put out the best offensive play callers for 2025. Okay, let me just start by this. How do you know if somebody called a good play or not? How do we know? How do we know if that coach called a good play or a bad play? How do you know? How do you know the quarterback didn't audible? How do you know everybody did the right job? How do you know everybody knew what play was being called and they didn't think it was something else? How do we know if somebody made a good play call or not?
I think it'd probably be sample size, because you're right, there's going to be times where there's an audible, or maybe it's just really good execution and the play actually wasn't run correctly and they get lucky. But if over a course of a season or course of seasons for a lot of these coaches on this list, you see productive offensive or quality offensive production, then yeah, you're going to go back to the biggest variable that instills that, and that would be the play caller.
Yeah.
So I think that would be, how do I know just from one play if it's the play call?
You don't.
You can't, probably.
You can't. It's like, and we'll get to this, I'm sure, as the morning rolls along, was J.J. Watt's tweet yesterday about reporters at camp tweeting about stats and whatnot in training camp. And, you know, sorry to eliminate the nerds from sports. I'm going to continue to do that. That's going to be my goal in life. Nerds, you're done. Out. Get out of sports. We don't need you. You know, out there charting plays and giving yardage and all this kind of stuff. And he's like, you don't even know what they're working on, right? You have no idea what these teams are working on. You know, we saw mistakes made by Jackson Dart. We saw one made by Aaron Rodgers. We saw one from a year ago by Justin Fields or whoever it was, Caleb Williams throwing an interception yesterday and whatnot. And everybody's like, oh, they're throwing interceptions on the first day of practice. And J.J. Watt's like, you have no idea what you're looking at. You don't know what people are trying to accomplish in practice, right? And that's where I go with the play calling right now. How do we know who's the best play caller? So they have Kyle Shanahan at number one on this list. That's everybody's darling, right? Everybody loves Kyle Shanahan. And even though he hasn't won, I can't say that word, from Shinola, everybody loves Kyle Shanahan. He's the greatest of all time. Ah, he's such a great play caller, right? Number two, Sean McVay is on that list. Very good offensive mind. Very good guy. One of my favorite coaches in the world. Love the guy to death. He's a very good football coach. Great football coach. He's won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think both those guys belong up there. Ben, not one and two, but
Ben Johnson at number three. I've yet to see Ben Johnson call a play as a head coach in the NFL.
As a head coach, fair. But he called the plays for the Detroit Lions, and they were damn good.
Yeah, they were. They were good. Maybe. Who knows? Maybe he'll have all bad play calls this year with Caleb Williams, you know? And then is it on him? I mean, or is it on the talent that's around him? Then you got Kevin O'Connell coming in at number four, who's working his way up the ladder. He's definitely among the conversation. Matt LaFleur is number five. I'm not sure why. Coming in at number six is Andy Reid. And that's kind of just where we start this whole thing and stop this whole thing.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You're telling me, nerd R us, that Andy Reid is the sixth best play caller in the NFL? Like, that's just stupid. Like, that's dumb. You know, like Ray Charles could see that Andy Reid is not the sixth best play caller in the NFL. His offenses are at the top of the league every single year, and they've been at the top of the league, whether it be Philadelphia or Kansas City, for a very long time. Andy Reid is better than all five of those guys put together and should be the number one guy on this list. But I know if you put Andy Reid number one on this list, nobody talks about it, nobody cares about it, and nobody gets their clicks. But I'll tell you what, this is another one of those things to just file away for the future when we're talking about the Chiefs and people are wanting to know why they're kicking everybody's ass this year. Well, some jackass said Andy Reid was the sixth best play caller in the NFL. Five guys above him, and they have, what, one Super Bowl win combined with all five of them, and that's Sean McVay with his Super Bowl win. So you're going to put five guys in the NFL ahead of Andy Reid? Andy Reid would go five guys. That's a good cheeseburger, but there's not five guys better than me when it comes to calling plays in the NFL. There's not one guy better than Andy Reid,
no,
in my opinion, when it comes to calling plays in the NFL.
Maybe all time.
And I don't know how good a play caller. It's execution. It ultimately is the execution. If you call this play, you know, let's just say Spider 2Y Banana, as we've all been familiar with, right? And it goes incomplete, people will say that was a terrible play call. If you call Spider 2Y Banana and somebody completes the pass and it gets you 15 yards, like, great play call. It's the same play. It's all about the execution of those plays. You become a better play caller when you have better players that can go out there and execute everything that you want. And I'm sure Andy Reid has become a better play caller as Mahomes has gotten more mature in the system too.
No doubt. I think watching the 2018 AFC Championship game, just randomly it came on. I think it was when you were gone. I talked to Dusty about that. And I talked about how Andy Reid has learned as a coach how to play call with Mahomes. He had to teach himself some things because he kind of had a cheat code with Patrick Mahomes to say, okay, the normal rules that I follow for play calling, for time management, for my decision making, is not the normal rules anymore because I've got the anomaly of all anomalies out there in number 15. So he kind of had to reteach himself some stuff, which is what great coaches do. But yeah, he's the best play caller probably of all time. We've seen multiple open touchdowns in the Super Bowl to win big games. We've seen open touchdowns in AFC Championship games with the game on the line. I will say, though, I don't mind the list above him. If you just moved Andy Reid to one and slotted everyone down a spot, I wouldn't mind this list by any means, honestly.
Yeah, but the whole
top five, at least. I think Mike McDaniel being in the top 10 is ridiculous. If he's at number nine, I think that's stupid. Chip Kelly on the Raiders is going to be in this list next year, by the way.
Probably so.
Yes.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah. From the 913, maybe they just watched Andy Reid call plays from first, second, third, and goal. That's a funny one. Well done. Well played. Yeah. Well played. Yeah.
Well, and I think with you talk about Andy Reid and his play calling, you know, yes, you talk about execution. Sure. So the plays work more because you have Patrick Mahomes, right? But we have, again, it goes back to sample size. We've seen Andy Reid succeed with name a QB, name the running back, name the offensive line, and name the team, Philadelphia or Kansas City. We've seen him succeed with everything, and I think that's why he stands the test of time as the best play caller, because it doesn't matter who the players are. He's going to get them to execute, and I think that is the number one responsibility of the play caller is the execution of the players. The players aren't executing. Sure, part of that's on the players, but that's your job as the coach to make sure they are, and that's why I think when you mentioned like Ben Johnson there high up, his play call, his system, his scheme, rather, is so complicated that the fact that they don't make a lot of mistakes on offense is a tribute to his success and his ability as a coach.
And we'll see what he does now as the head coach.
Of course.
And how he's able to balance those things, because a lot of guys have a lot of trouble balancing being the offensive guy and the head coach. I mean, there's not many other people in the NFL that I would trust to do what Andy Reid's doing right now, be the head coach and be the offensive mind. You know, Sean McVay obviously has earned those stripes as well, and he's got the opportunity to do that. But these young guys kind of come into the league at 35 years old and think they're going to be the head coach and the offensive play caller, and they have no idea what they're cut out for. They have no idea what the job entails of just being a head coach, and then the offensive plays go by the wayside. Andy Reid knows how to do it because he's been around the block and he has, you know, that kind of experience for it, for being able to do that. So that's where I look at Andy Reid. I think a lot of this stuff, you know, is about execution. And if a player executes a play and it looks good and they go for positive yards, it looks like it's a great play. If it gets stuffed behind the line of scrimmage, we say it's a bad play call. Meanwhile, the defense may have just had a good read on it and they knew what to do better on that play.
Yeah, some text. If Andy Reid was so great, he wouldn't get blown out in two Super Bowls, bro. It's crazy, man. Wow. Best of all time, you guys watch him not score from goal line every Sunday, right?
So is every play supposed to be a touchdown?
Yeah, I guess so. So they're pretty efficient in the red zone, I'd say it. I get you what you're talking about. Third and one, if you're talking short yardage,
of course.
I understand.
Everybody's
there's frustrations.
Yeah, of course. Nobody's perfect. Nobody's asking anybody to be perfect. Things happen. People make mistakes. The 11 other guys on defense are paid to make plays as well. Sometimes they make plays. It happens, right? And that's okay because that's what they're paid to do. So, you know, you're not going to get every play perfect. Nothing's perfect. If you're looking for Andy Reid or the Chiefs to be perfect every Sunday, find a hobby and go whittle. I mean, because you're it's never going to be that way. No team is perfect at any point in time.
And I love this text real quick from the 913. Going from OC to head coach is like going from the driver to the mechanic.
Hell of a text.
Great text.
Yeah.
Great
text. It really
text.
Is. Yeah. Hell of a text, man. Completely different jobs. It's too hard to do both. Seth Lugo is going to be the topic of conversation, I think, all weekend long. In Major League Baseball, what we're 6 days away now from the trade deadline. As we sit here today, it will be August 1st, right? So the trade deadline is a week from Thursday, or a week from yesterday. So we're inside a week now to the trade deadline, and the buzz is going to be around what the Royals are going to do. If you ask me today, the Royals, to me, are not a playoff team, right? If you ask me after the weekend and they swept the Cleveland Guardians, then I'll look at it maybe differently and think, okay, maybe they are back in this thing, being at 500. A sweep only gets you back to 500 this weekend over the Guardians, right? So that's why it's imperative to go out there and sweep, because you've got to get back to 500 before we can start having the conversations of whether or not this is a playoff team, right? You've got to get back to 500. And you have a golden opportunity to do that right now. You have a golden opportunity to go out there and really make up some ground and increase where you are in the standings, both in the American League Central, which, don't look now, Detroit isn't playing great baseball right now. They've lost a lot over the last week or so, right?
Nine back now, nine and a half instead of 12.
Yeah,
and a half.
I mean, so that lead has kind of shrunk a little bit, right? It's not a double-digit lead anymore, or a double-digit deficit, I should say, for the Royals in the American League Central right now. It's down to single digits. And so as Detroit starts to kind of lose games and kind of comes back to the pack and has that late season swoon, you've got an opportunity here if you're the Royals. You've got an opportunity in the wild card race as well. But you have to take advantage of those opportunities. And I don't want to use this as like, oh, in life, we don't get many opportunities. We need to take advantage of them. But over the course of a baseball season, you don't have those opportunities that often. And when they do present themselves, you've got to take advantage of those opportunities. I think Cleveland is looking at this as an opportunity for them to increase their lead in the wild card over the Royals and maybe eliminate the Royals this weekend and put them kind of at bay. But also the Royals need to be looking at this weekend and saying to themselves, this is our season here, right? This is our season. We've seen a lot of reports and heard from a lot of folks that cover Major League Baseball that this was the week that the Royals were going to use to evaluate where they are in the standings and where they are as it, you know, factors into the postseason. You lost 2 out of 3 to Miami. You took 2 out of 3 from the Chicago Cubs, right? Okay, so you kind of have an idea of where you are after those 6 games. You're 3-3 at this point in time coming out of the All-Star break. You've done nothing to help yourself. You've done nothing really to hurt yourself in a week, right? You've maintained status quo. Now you have the opportunity because you maintained status quo and didn't, you know, gain anything in the standings or with your own record. Now you have an opportunity that you need to take advantage of. And that's going out there and sweeping the Cleveland Indians. And in my opinion, a sweep is mandatory this weekend if you want to stay in the playoff conversation, if you want to stay in the playoff race. I think you need to go out there and sweep Cleveland this weekend. But we'll know a lot more what the Royals are going to do after this weekend kind of takes shape, and we'll see. Now, I will say this. Regardless of what happens this weekend, okay, regardless if they sweep Cleveland, they get swept by Cleveland, they win one, they win two, whatever the case may be, whatever that scenario paints itself to be, Seth Lugo still needs to be traded. Whether it is a sweep, whether it's a getting swept, either way, Seth Lugo needs to be traded by this Kansas City Royals organization, because I do believe that Seth Lugo is the biggest chip that they've had in their arsenal this side of Aroldis Chapman, and maybe you even go back to a guy like Zach Greinke that could help you replenish your organization and to make your organization better. Now, I don't believe they're going to get a haul like they did for Zach Greinke, where you get your starting center fielder, you get your starting shortstop, you get some pitchers that you're able to move to increase your opportunity to get better pitchers in Davis and Shields and that kind of stuff. But you have an opportunity now with Seth Lugo that you can't let slip by. Just like the team can't let this opportunity against the Guardians slip by not sweeping them, the front office can't let this opportunity of Seth Lugo slip by without trading him. Because I still think when you look at the Royals as an organization, they're not the Dodgers. We all know that, right? They're not one of the premier top teams, but they have an opportunity to be one of those second tier teams consistently, because we've got an owner that's willing to invest. We've got an owner that's willing to spend. We've got a general manager that is willing to go out there and be transactional and make moves and try to make this ball club better. And Seth Lugo is the perfect trade chip for you to do that. And so the ball club on the field has a major opportunity this weekend. And the ball club off the field with Seth Lugo, I think also Mac has an opportunity to do something special and to trade Seth Lugo, however you want to say it, and get capital back in return that can help you short-term and long-term. We mentioned Jaron Duran yesterday. That name took off like wildfire.
Man, it did.
After we talked about him yesterday. Everybody kind of pointing to that maybe being the guy in Boston that could end up here in Kansas City for a guy like Seth Lugo, and that would be a huge win for the Royals as an organization. You would get a power bat in the outfield, and you would be exponentially better at all of your outfield positions by making that move.
And you'd have control over that power bat until 2028,
right?
And you'd be selling off a pitcher, selling him high, who's a 35-year-old pitcher. So I think you make complete sense, and I think the correct way to go about it is the way you started with saying, whether it's a sweep or whether they get swept, no matter what happens, selling Lugo is the correct idea. It is the correct move. From the 816, sweep would be nice. A 4-2 homestand is a must at the least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, you've got the Braves and Cleveland coming in. And as we know, the Braves are not really good, right? They're not a great team right now, but they still have a lot of great talent on that ball club.
Yeah.
And a lot of great players on that ball club. And, you know, Jaron Duran, we're talking about a guy who is, you know, hitting 250 this year, right? He's got 9 homers, 52 RBIs, over 100 hits for you. And last year, I mean, think about it like this. I mean, last year, this guy ranked 8th and it placed 8th in MVP voting. So you're talking about getting a guy that was a top 10 MVP candidate from a year ago, who is now just on the outside looking in Boston because they've got a crowded outfield. They brought up Roman Anthony. So now he's a guy that you have the opportunity. If you're the Red Sox, you're kind of looking at him probably the same way we should be looking at Seth Lugo, as an opportunity to improve your team for the stretch run. Boston went on and won 10 in a row right before the All-Star break to get themselves firmly back in the conversation of being a playoff team. If they were to add Seth Lugo into the mix and you have that guy in your rotation right now, if you're the Red Sox,
scary.
Holy cow, man. Like, I think Seth Lugo is going to be the biggest move that is made and the most impactful move that is made this trade season for the receiving team, especially, right? If you're the Mets, if you are the Cubs, if you are the Yankees, if you are the Dodgers, you know, if you're one of these top teams and you're able to get Seth Lugo and add him into your rotation, Mac, you've increased your chances of going deep into the postseason because Lugo, to me, is that perfect postseason pitcher.
Yeah, he is, and other people want him. This is not just the Mets that want him. Other teams, you get a bidding war going here if you're Piccolo right now. You got a lot of teams needing someone who can step up and be that starting pitcher in a rotation come playoff time. You've got a guy in a win-now mode in Lugo. Man, this just makes too much sense to not do this. You've got to get this done. What is it? It's 25th, so you got 5 days?
6 days, yeah.
6 days.
Hey, look, it doesn't have to be for Jaren Duran, but that's just a name that's been out there.
Of course.
That would be a logical fit. That's what we do, right, at this time of the year. We look for teams that may have a logical fit. And the Royals may not even be talking to the Red Sox at this point in time. Who knows who they're talking to? But they need to be talking to everybody. And like, this is one of those deals where you give these teams, you have until Wednesday at noon to bring me your best offer for Seth Lugo. And do it like when you acquire guys from Japan. Everybody turns in an envelope. They open the envelope. The highest number wins, right?
Mm.
That's kind of, if I'm JJ, I'm calling any team that I've talked to about Seth Lugo. And I'm saying Wednesday at noon Central Time, so 1 o'clock on the East Coast, you have to bring me your best offer for Seth Lugo. I will open the envelopes, I will go through them, and then I will contact the team that I think is the best offer, right? And I know it's not done like that, come kiss the ring and things, that sounds ridiculous.
Of course.
But that's kind of how I would do it. I'd like to see, give me your best and final offer. It's like a car dealership, right? You don't want to go down there and negotiate. Nobody wants to deal with that kind of stuff. Let's get to the end really, really fast. Let's speed date. We're in a world where we speed everything up, right? Like, we don't want to wait for anything. So I would imagine in sports, it's kind of the same way. Give me your best offer. Write it down. Put it in ink. And we'll go from there. And then we'll say, this is the offer we're taking. This is your best. Yeah, it's best offer. Fine. Deal done. And we'll move on from there. But I think that's the way that they need to approach Seth Lugo. I think he's too valuable a piece to keep on this team after the July 31st trade deadline. And again, it doesn't mean that you are giving up on life and waving the white flag on the season by any means, in my opinion, right? Some people will look at it like
that. No.
But you can still win and you can still get into the playoffs without Seth Lugo. I don't think you can get into the playoffs if you keep Seth Lugo and don't add a bat.
I think either way you're building for next year. And so if it's playoffs this year, it's great. If not, it's not this year. You're building for next year at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we all need to get in that mindset.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. It's okay to admit, like, hey, this may not be a playoff team. It's okay to admit that right now.
Yeah.
And start to focus on next year. And it's healthier, quite honestly, if you admit where you are.
Get some closure.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the organization as well.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Like admitting, okay, and understanding, because if you think you're in it when you're really not, it hampers what you want to do to make your team better long term. That false sense of security is the worst thing that any of us can have, really, in any kind of life. So coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, it was one of the great sports upsets of all time, and that's not an understatement. Next.
Hey, it's Michael Wacha, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Back at it here on 96.5 The Fan. It is a beautiful Friday. It is Fesco and Dusty, sans Dusty with Mac, because Dusty's on vacation. He'll be back on Monday, and Mac is here on Friday, and he's got his friends coming in, so there's no chance he'll be here on Monday.
That's probably true.
Did I get that all right?
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
I rolled through all of that, yeah. So there you go. You got your opportunity with your friends in town this weekend to have some fun.
I'm very excited.
I'm sure you are. Looking forward to that. And we're headed down to Tammy's house at the lake for a couple of days this weekend. Yeah,
that'll be fun.
So that'll be good.
That'll be really nice.
Yeah, it'll be awesome, man. It'll be fun just to get away for the last, I guess, really the last time before school starts next week or so, the week after, pretty much. I mean, you know, we got, you know, the first weekend in August next week, and then, you know, my wife goes back the following Monday, the kids go back the following week, and then, yeah.
Bob's home alone.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's from thing to thing to thing to thing. It falls very busy, as everybody knows. And so you get to enjoy these last couple of weekends of summer where you don't have 16 soccer tournaments, 15 cheerleading events, and all kinds of things going on, right? And then Old Settlers Day, before you know it, it's going to be coming up in downtown Olathe. You're getting a lot of drugs to get through that one. So that's for all the parents who stand on the parade route to watch 700 floats go by. We'll get our Richard of the Week coming up in about 10 minutes or so here on 96.5 The Fan. My buddy Jim just texted me, and I forgot to bring this up with you early. Do you want Christian Wilkins here in Kansas City? Real quick, I mean, we don't have to get into, you know, that he was cut by the Raiders. He didn't, you know, listen to them when it came to rehabbing his foot injury. They said, screw you, pal, we're gone.
Yeah.
And their statement was unbelievable. We're getting back to committing to excellence, and you're gone. I mean, it was really like, it was an unbelievable statement that I'd never saw a team release anything like that before. So clearly they were ticked with him, but he's going to be cheap, bro.
That's the thing.
And for me, I'm never one of these, let's just go get him and take a flyer. But for this guy, I'm like, well, you got a bad foot. You didn't listen, but it's also the Raiders. I mean, and as much as I'm like, oh, it's the Raiders are having a nice little kind of run going, getting a lot of excitement, a lot of buzz going on. You still got Lloyd Christmas owning your team with that bowl headed haircut. And so, you know, it's still the Raiders, regardless if it's Pete Carroll. So anytime the Raiders release somebody, I'm always like, how much of this was the team versus the player? I don't know. What do you think? Take a flyer on this cat?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
why not? Literally. I mean, this is a former all-pro defensive tackle, one of the best at his position when healthy. I mean, I remember when they got him 2 years ago, it was like, whoa, him and Max Crosby on the same defensive line, it was going to be scary. And they got, they played four or five games, maybe six games together
right
until the injury occurred. So unfortunate for the Raiders, really unfortunate for Christian Wilkins. If he is going to get back to 80% of what Christian Wilkins was 2 years ago, there's literally a no-brainer. He's going to be cheap. He's making a crap ton of money from this Raiders deal that they just bought him out on. So, yeah, come bring him in. Hey, you know what? If you've got bad blood with the Raiders and you don't like the way they just handled that, do you want to play him twice a year for the next couple of years?
Yeah.
Come on.
I think so.
Let's go.
And look, we could use that guy, too, on the defensive line, right? Again, I don't know when he's going to be healthy. He's got somebody like Liz Frank on his foot. I don't know what that means. But, you know, he didn't rehab properly or whatever the Raiders say. But, you know, the other side to this is, and you don't see this often where players don't listen to the teams about what they want them to do for rehab, but the other side is, it's my body, and maybe it doesn't feel good doing it this way or whatever. I don't like what this doctor's telling me, or maybe you've got a foot specialist or somebody that's telling you, you know, something else or whatever the case may be. Like, there are two sides to every single story when a team releases somebody that we immediately are like, oh, the player did something wrong. He didn't want to rehab the right way. Well, maybe he was rehabbing the way that he felt was best for him and didn't like what they were suggesting to him. And so he's also the Raiders, and maybe he wanted out of there.
Yeah,
too,
maybe he was like, this is actually a way for me to leave.
Yeah.
No, I think this is a no-brainer. You at least give him a call. You see what's going on with the foot, what it looks like, timeline. Get your doctor's opinions on it. I mean, if everything's clear, and again, if he's just like going to be back and maybe not be 100%, but he's 70, 80% of what he was, yeah, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah,
no-brainer.
Absolutely.
Him and Chris Jones right next to each other, that's wow.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be awesome.
That would be really good.
Yes.
Yeah, and don't forget,
I know that I'm hard.
Jerry Tillery is still part of this team.
For sure.
And two big rookies are still part of this team.
Yeah.
You know, we got Norman Lear and, you know, the
Norman
other
Lott
guy.
And Ashton Gelati.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, you got two guys that you drafted that you love. You got two veteran guys in there. There's room for one more, especially 100%. A former Pro Bowler, you know?
100%. And then add those edge rushers and Karloftis and a Minihue. I mean, this could be scary.
You know,
that
it's funny.
Scary.
I texted you yesterday. He'll be a chief. You go, is that coming from a source or something?
I was
opinion?
Like, please,
like, is this
please?
Real? I'm like, no, it's my opinion on this one right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's
fair
my
enough.
Opinion on that one right now.
I was hopeful for a second.
But you never know. I mean, it just sounds like a move that this team would make. They're always looking to make their roster better. It doesn't matter what position or how. A healthy Christian Wilkins makes your roster a hell of a lot better on the defensive line.
And what makes it a Chiefs-type move is that it's low risk, high reward.
Yeah.
The risk, Christian Wilkins would be $5 million, a few million bucks. Okay, doesn't work. All right, you get $2 million of that. All right, we'll see you later. Or if it works, great. We just got a former All-Pro defensive tackle who's 30 years old and still just wreaking havoc next to the best at their position in Chris Jones.
Yeah, I don't know how it works in the NFL, because in baseball, if somebody like gets rid of you, you know, and trades you, you'll get the difference, right? They pick up the difference of the league minimum, and that's the prorated portion of the salary. I don't know how it works in the NFL with, you know, with all that, because they said they terminated the contract because he wasn't listening. So they cut it off at the head. So is he a street free agent? He can sign anywhere for any amount. I don't know the inner workings of all of that kind of stuff. But if he's a guy out there and the Chiefs like him and they sign him, I'm all for it. I'd be all for that signing. I'm for every signing that they do, because they know what they're doing, right? They could sign you and I'd be like, okay, the Chiefs signed him. They got a plan. Brett's got a plan. Andy's got a plan.
My shake move.
They need some work. I mean, you can barely shake me drunk in a parking lot on a Thursday. You know,
BBL stinky.
Yeah, you got that going for you too. So, I said it going into break. This is not an overstatement, but you know, when you look at Hulk Hogan beating Andre the Giant in the WWE, WWF back in the day, that's one of the great all-time moments, I think, in sports, one of the big upsets in sports, and really kind of put that league on the map, right? You know, with Hulk Hogan passing away yesterday, you start to think about all the stuff that he's accomplished and had accomplished over his wrestling career. And I think, you know, going up there and beating Andre the Giant in the Pontiac Silverdome, you know, in Raw or whatever they were calling it back in the day, one of the more important moments of all time for that organization to kind of take that next step, showing that the young guy has come on board. And I was reading a story about that the other day. It's like Hulk Hogan was talking about, we know what the script is. We hope Andre's going to follow that script, right? And I'm supposed to beat him in this and be the next guy to kind of take over. And it looked out and it became one of the great upsets in sports, because I don't think anybody going into that expected that to happen. You know, you're not thinking that's the way it's going to be. But they made it happen because they know they needed to change over. They know that they needed to evolve. They know they needed to move on. I think sports, the real sports, you know, the actual games, not the wrestling entertainment side of things, can learn a lot from the WWE and the WWF. And if they haven't, then they're making big mistakes, because they have found a way to be sports and entertainment. Savannah Bananas, sports and entertainment. You find a way to entertain, keep people engaged. And the WWE had storylines, bro, well before the NBA and the NFL and Major League Baseball had those storylines. And what do we live and die on when it comes to sports these days? The storylines that aren't sports. I sent you that email yesterday of the most clicked on stories on The Athletic this week, right? How many of those involved the game?
Zero.
None. Yeah. Power rankings, trade targets, you know, moves teams could make, all kinds of stuff like that. That was the drama of sports. That was the outside of the game type of stuff, the entertainment side of stuff that people really like, the storylines of sports. And that's what the WWE showed, and Hulk Hogan showed. You could create these storylines and people would follow along. And that's what we do in the NBA. That's what we do in the NFL. What are the storylines we're already following? What's going to happen with Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys? Mm. Nobody cares about on the field. It's Micah Parsons. It's the off the field, the way he's talking about his players. Cincinnati, same way. What's the number one story there? Ain't Joe Burrow. It's what's going on with their number one draft pick, right? Everybody's talking 100%. About that. It's all off the field stuff. What do people talk about? Power rankings, trades. That's what people like. And the WWE showed back in the day that storylines will ultimately sell when it comes to that sport. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, we do our Richard of the Week next.
Fesco and Dusty. Subscribe and watch the show on YouTube by going to our channel at The Fan 96.5, Kansas City's FM sports station. 96.5 The Fan.